drafting this quixotically flamboyant epic hybrid focused on North America's most mongo salamander, I chose the enigmatic structural form of Cryptobranchus alleganus, a twisting, torquing species with all sorts of squiggle rhythms wiggling fluidly.
Today on Arts and Letters, we'll be talking with Arkansas writer Mark Spitzer. His epic-length poem, Glurk, A Hellbender Odyssey, published by Anaphora Literary Press, is about North America's largest salamander, the Hellbender.
What follows, therefore, is a narrative that relies on folklore, salamander scholarship, conservation efforts, and personal experience to send a semi-absurd, yet solemn package of environmental messages to embellish a strangely ornate body of investigative poetics, and, most importantly, to spread the gospel of Glurk.
Glurk, A Hellbender Odyssey, Profiles in Hellbendage, Research and Outreachio, and Epic Poetry by Mark Spitzer on Arts and Letters.
The plight of this prehistoric amphibious phenomenon has as much to say about humans and our relationship with the natural world as it does about hellbenders themselves.
Going down to that water, like we used to do, watching the willows swaying in the breeze like time.
I'm Jay Bradley Minnick, and welcome to Arts and Letters, a program providing opportunities for the celebration of the arts and humanities.
And you fly like the heron out of my arms.
Today we'll be talking with Mark Spitzer. He is the author of 23 books, including fish books, novels, memoirs, translations, and collections of poetry.
In the sky.
His newest work, Glurk, A Hellbender Odyssey, is indeed an epic poem. Part scientific narrative, part bender biology, part neologism-filled lyric, part ecological mosaic, and in it, we even hear from a misunderstood salamander named B14.
B14 treks by night, rests by day, and keeps glurking on, always avoiding his own kind. But then B14 amends that thought into, no way, I'm just a kid. So how could I be so old so soon? So he strikes out, swishelating into the churn, dingle leeches dangling, organs aheave with caustic chug.
Writer, fisherman, Glurk historian, ecological epic poet Mark Spitzer, welcome.
Thanks, Brad. It's always good to glurk with you.
So tell us what the hellbender salamander looks like.
Well, they can grow about 2.5 feet long. They've got all this rippling, wavy flesh on them, these epidermal flaps, sort of like skin between their limbs. You imagine like a flying squirrel has that flap of skin between its arms. And they're full of these microtubes. They don't have gills, so there's holes in their flesh that suck up the particles that they breathe. They got big, flat heads. They look sort of like a hamburger patty with these little eyes, comic looking.
Somewhere long ago.
Muppet mouth. They've got an oar-shaped tail. They're slimy. They're covered with goo. And a lot of them now actually have this disease called chytrid fungus. And because of this, they're losing their toes and their fingers.
How many of these are left?
At the last count, there was 590 wild Ozark hellbenders. There's two kinds of hellbenders. There's the Ozark and there's the Eastern. We have the Ozarks here in Arkansas, and there's some in Missouri too. We're supplementing these numbers every year, though. Thousands are being born at the St. Louis Zoo, and then they're being put back into the wild. but the survival rate is not very high for those little suckers.
Partly because of environmental issues, right? They are very susceptible to toxins.
Toxins, sedimentation, construction. I mean, they just have a lot of predators. The trout eat them, the other fish eat them, the birds eat them, the raccoons eat them, the snakes eat them. It's not easy being a cryptobranchoid. Glurk, glurk, with your wide and comic Muppet mouth and those flabby epidermal flaps. Glurk, glurk, with your warty whittle toes, with your flat-bodied, dorsally ventricated, low-belly structure, with your oar-shaped tail, keeled primarily for propulsion. Glurk, the largest, wrinkliest, under-glurker of your class, sometimes surpassing 2 feet long. Glurk, glurk, because that's what you do, crawling, crawling into the current, sliding slimy under rocks. Glurk, Hellbender, glurk and lurk of Oblivion.
Why an epic poem? Is it because these creatures have been around a long time?
No, it's just the format that I wanted to work with. I like to write poetry every once in a while to get away from prose, and you can reach a different audience, you know, with poetry. And then I got the idea of creating the electric Hellbender.
Just to clarify, the Hellbender's an instrument that you made.
Yeah, I've got this electric Hellbender, which is really an electric guitar I bought and disassembled and put back together, but I built a sculpture around it. It's about 4 feet long, and it's made out of drainage tubing and insulating foam and uncooked lasagna noodles, and it looks like a crazy-looking Hellbender. Glurk, glurk, you freaky, bizarro, weirdo creature, actually hearing through your jaw. Glurking around all splotchy brown, or orangish with a rusty tinge, your entire spotty squiggle skin, slickened with photosensitive cells.
How did the Hellbender get its name?
Theory number one came straight from the settlers. Glurking grotesque and grotally, this mass cast out of hell is bent on bending its way back. But then there's theory number two. According to Barton in 1812, slaves in Virginia saw its slow, twisted motions as the torturous pangs of the damned in hell.
And it's gone by a lot of other names.
Yep. Mud devil, ground puppy, Allegheny alligator, not to mention just plain old alligator, young alligator or little alligator, or water dog or hogfish, or walking catfish, or big water lizard, or lasagna lizard, or tweck, that's mincy, or tokameg from the Chippewa. Another name that never stuck was Leverian water newt, so named by Dr. Shaw at the Leverian Museum back in 1800s England. As for the final Latin incarnation, because benders are born with fringy gills, which eventually shrink into gooey slits, spherically set behind the neck, Cryptobranchus came along, meaning hidden gills.
Just as an aside, I'm very impressed by your ability to say all these big words, all put together in some kind of crazy collage. In your epic, you as a writer engage in linguistic Adderall collateral.
Glurking, glurking, globally, globally, gliberating, lugubriously, glurkulating, glurkensteins, glurbulating, galubriously, gloop, glop, gloop, glop, gloop, glop. All Hellbenders are going down. That's the prognosis. The whole damn species scheduled as a sacrifice for our freedom to expand. Glurk that. Glurk this.
So is that the prognosis?
Oh, yeah. Some biologists give them 30 years. Others 50. But who knows? That's maybe all the time we have left, too.
And they're really interesting creatures, right? I mean, they do hear through their jaw.
Yeah, yeah.
And they breathe oxygen?
They can breathe underwater, and I do think they have some sort of lung-like organs, so they can come out, but they stay primarily in the water.
I'm Jay Bradley Minnick, and you're listening to...
Glurk.
Mark...
Glurk.
Spitzer. Talking about and reading from his epic poem, Glurk, Glurk, A Hellbender Odyssey. About the Gospel of Glurk on Arts and Letters. So you describe, and I love this, the 2014 Ozark Hellbender Fest in Pocahontas, Arkansas.
We camped in the old settlement park, then drove into town, saw the famous asteroid, and made our way to the square. The first place we stopped was a rundown junk shop that used to be the local brothel. They had plow parts, jars of jam, and an antique cathode ray machine. But they also had one remaining Save the Hellbender t-shirt made in Spain, which I bought. Armadillo Jeff was pumped to run the annual Hellbender 5K, but there was no registration tent. Also, the Hellbender lecture had been canceled because of the recent F4 tornado that wiped out the Game and Fish Commish down in central Arkansas. And there was no Hellbender auction this year, and there was no Hellbender boogie dice biker run, but across from the old courthouse, there was a dumpy, lumpy sculpture of one. The Hellbender Festival seems to be disintegrating year by year, just like amphibians all over the world. In fact, we're in the middle of a sixth mass extinction, and amphibians, as usual, are on the front lines. And Hellbenders, unfortunately, are on the front line of the front line, and they're going down at a rapid rate. In fact, without our help, Hellbenders may not exist on this planet by mid-century. So what's at stake? Everything.
You write, what's at stake, everything? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, Hellbenders are basically, you know, barometers of our water quality. And so losing all these Hellbenders is basically telling us that we've got a problem in our midst. And this problem is coming downstream. So what I mean by everything is pollution is really starting to take its toll. And there's a lot less clean water on the planet than there was 50, 100 years ago. We're making it toxic, and the whole world is at stake. You last remaining giant American salamander, cut off from your ancient Asian cousins. Lurking on, the full-grown hellbender is committed to his mission of staking out a rock for himself, rarely glurking gregariously, always glurking warily.
And in Glurk Specimen B14, you take us into the world of a single glurk.
Yeah, you know, this book is written primarily in poetry, but it crosses a lot of genres. There's actual citations in the book, and it reports from a sort of non-fiction journalist point of view, but it also has a fictional aspect. And book three, Glurk Specimen B14, is sort of this fictional biography of this Glurkin hellbender, and we follow this hellbender as he struggles against this and he struggles against that, and he meets all sorts of characters. But there's some real-life context. I get facts into the fiction.
Would you mind reading one of the poems from the B14 section?
I sort of like this one, The New Sex Symbol on the Block. By B14's third winter, a.k.a. his second year, he is 4.8 inches long and still holding on. Lacking gullular folds and visible somites, black spots gaining prominence, his horizontal skirty wings are becoming meta, miraculously notched. As he sits in wait of what's to come, digesting, defending, hunting, haunting, his run like a ghost trapped between two worlds. Because B14, the most well-traveled bender to ever traverse the stream, is still sexually immature. The hot young Glurkies, though, have their winky eyes on him. He's strong, he's swift. And having recovered from his abysmal experience, B14 has tight jeans. So they giggle and wiggle from a distance, which he can sense just as much. I'm not as young as I used to be, is B14's primary thought, translated, of course, into a quasi-Germanic tongue. But then B14 amends that thought into, no way, I'm just a kid, so how could I be so old so soon? Whatever the case, there are irritating parasites all over his splotched skin, so he gets to work, grinding them against a rock. You never know what these creatures will do. Why, once in 1967, E.D. Robin removed a lung to see if twigs could get along without this vestigial apparatus. Incidentally, that glurker glurked on, thereby proving such organs are for buoyancy. And another time, back in 1824, R. Harland sent a bender straight to hell by placing it in brackish water. Specimen B14, however, never knew those hellatives or their hell narratives, All he knows is that bros have been bashed upon the rocks and that sisters have been hauled up by their guts, which is why, all frantic and freaking out, he winds his way downstream, all the way past a familiar abyss and into a strange new hydro flow coming from a fracking ditch. And I tell you this, there is no sequel for B-14, only the chaos of eviscerating skin disemboweling from within and the stranglehold of asphyxia. Meaning life becomes a bummer extreme for our hero, B-14. Here come the bass, here come the trout, here come the herons and the hawks, but even worse, here come the descendants of Homo erectus.
Hope you know.
The giggers and the fishermen, the farmers and construction trucks, canoers and tubers turning over rocks.
Hope you know. Miserable.
Even trained researchers sticking and stabbing and plucking them up.
It's always something.
Gurgling Glurk.
Yeah, it's always something.
What's a poor hellbender to do?
All hail the Ron Gellner Center for Hellbender Conservation at the St. Louis Zoo Wildcare Institute, where deep in herpetorium, a decade of glurkiology has led to an amphi revolution. The state-of-the-art Ozark Hellbender Headquarters, a flagship species of the zoo, is the only place on the planet where these squeegee-skinned baby branchoids have been bred in captivity.
Tell us a little bit about the Ron Gellner Center for Hellbender Conservation. Mm-hmm. You've been there.
Yeah. I took a tour of it. They specialize in reintroducing and repopulating hellbenders. They work primarily with the Missouri Department of Conservation, and then the zoo has a number of biologists. And this place has thousands of hellbenders, thousands of Easterns, thousands of Ozark hellbenders. They're reproducing them in there. They're at pretty much all stages of life. There's just aquariums lining all the walls. There's tanks everywhere. And then they've got like these faux streams that they've made that replicate the conditions in nature. That when it rains outside, they have fake rain that falls inside. The light is simulated. They have these hellbender huts, which they call them, which they put at the bottom of these systems, and the hellbenders go in there and they mate. And they've got lids on top so then biologists can go in and they can take out the eggs that have been fertilized and put them in tanks. And so there's a lot of state-of-the-glurk research going on at the Ron Gellner Center. It took years of finding the balance betwixt hard and soft water, replicating conditions in nature, harvesting eggs from the field, experimenting with hellbender huts, and triggering conceptio. Starting with a hall of quarantine where feeder fish chill for 3 weeks, to the main chamber where three full-time staffers are supported by interns and volunteers feeding and adjusting, watching where the water's at. There are tons of tanks lining all walls, jam-packed with all sizes of both Eastern and Ozarkians, though the Ozarks are more colorful.
You write that the mission is to find the decline in order to preserve various clashing cryptoclans.
They're tagged with chips and flagged for infection. Only those free of disease are released at 5 or 6 inches. In 2013, 706 zoo-reared juvies were freed in native habitats, with consistent figures following that. This is where I asked my burning question of bendery. So if the scientific consensus is that there are only 590 Ozark benders being free at last count, and if the cryptobranco authorities actually foresee these species not lasting 3 decades, will all this effort really pay off? And the answer, of course, is as evident as the fervor in this massive bunker of glurk.
Long distance is like 1,000 miles away. And that's a long distance, but I think that's how it'll stay.
You do ask this question, will this effort pay off? It sounds like you hope so, but you're not confident necessarily it will.
It's a lot of slow little steps.
And I had 1 too many, 2 too many, 3 I'm ready to go.
It's not something that's happening overnight. It's something that's going to take sometimes one step forward, two steps back. The big authorities I talk to aren't really confident that these guys are going to make it 30 or 40 years. We don't really know if they are, but we've got hope, and it's amazing what's being done for this species. Whereas look at all the other species on the planet that are just, disappearing all the time.
You're listening to Arts and Letters. We're talking with Mark Spitzer about the Hellbender Salamander and his epic poem on the subject, Glurk, a Hellbender Odyssey.
Some things are meant to be lost. You won't find them anywhere. They live in the shadows of the dark.
I was stunned by the research in the book because you are right. There are so many species that are not being cared for,
right.
I guess, to the degree that this one is at this point.
Right.
You have folks in Indiana and Purdue University and New York that are concerned.
Oh, yeah. There's a really concerted nationwide effort wherever these creatures exist to keep them going.
Oh, but the good ones come back to you.
Indiana is currently establishing baseline conditions for awareness and perceptions of benders in their midst, and data from these efforts is now being analyzed to evaluate effectiveness. HelpTheHellbender.org was launched back in 2012. This clearinghouse for Hellbender info lists actions locals can take. In the meantime, educators can request classroom presentations plus posters and stickers for the kids.
Some things are meant to be lost. Some get lost when they have to. And I don't know which one is me.
Purdue U offers electronic field trips focused on genetics, which reach over 4,000 studi per year from 350 schools spanning 28 states. A mascot named Herbie the Hellbender shows up at civic events, handing out bobbers touting the slogan, "Help the Hellbender cut the line." A plastic Hellbender statue tours the world, spreading Hellbender fever wherever it goes. In Ohio, the If You See the Salamander, Let Us Know business card is making the rounds to fishermen surveyed in the field. To quote eco-blogger Jenny Veal, "North America's largest salamander is a rock star within the scientific community. More importantly, though, how can we in good consciousness not strive like we're striving? With Hellbender huts and public outreach, with programs for kids and ramparting plans, with research and testing and H2O vigilance, with everything we need to do."
Why do you think people have taken up the cause of this particular creature?
What we're finding is that this species, which is extremely sensitive to sedimentation and pollution and development and overall water quality alterations, are sending us a message. They're saying, hey, you live downstream of us, so if we're having problems up here, that means something toxic is coming your way.
After all the plans unravel, unfolding its own to travel, I still hear a rabble, rabble, ringing in my ears.
Not only that, but biodiversity is always an issue. More species on our planet means more hope for us, because the less we have, the more there are affected by disease.
And all the things we tether to separate and come unglued. Well, all the while we stay true, respecting our own ways.
Which ties into our food supply and our prospects for medicine and getting by in an increasingly warming global climate, one in which the imagination might just be our last effective tool to keep on glurking on.
So do what we'll do and say what we'll say, 'cause I still see your ember in the dark from miles away. So live and let live, what I wouldn't give if you'd live and let me love you from here.
Whether we acknowledge it or not, we look for ourselves in animals. We personify eyes and appreciate bipedal activity.
This will be the land tear and draw. There's a time to cry, now it's time to storm.
In whatever species we extrapolate into visions of ourselves, the babies are always funner to ponder.
And I've cried enough for both of us. Baby, that's a lie.
So if there's one thing about the bender that endears them to us, it's their wiggle-ific paws. Because when you stare a bender in the eye, you end up focusing on its toes, which, in essence, is our connection with this aspect of the wild.
This will be the last tear I draw.
Broadcast from the studios of KUAR in Little Rock, you've been listening to Arts and Letters. Thanks for joining us. To check out past episodes, go to artsandlettersradio.org. Leave us a comment there and let us know what you've thought about the program. Thank you, Mark Spitzer, who played the electric Hellbender, a reassembled Stratocaster with whammy bar and distortion box built into a crypto conglomeration of drainage tubing, insulating foam, and uncooked lasagna noodles that creates flubbery feedback undulations. Thank you to Kinder Funken for the Glurk music. Thank you to Mary Ellen Cubitt for the good glurking advice. Thank you to Chris Hickey, who helps us produce these shows. Thank you to Gallows Bound. Kelly Deal and Mike Montgomery of Our Ring.
You and I belong to the steam.
Open Fields. The Uh-Huhs.
Long distance is like 1,000 miles away.
Amy Joseph Ann. Joey Kenizer and Kelly Smith.
Oh, but the good ones come back to you.
John Burnett.
After all the plans unravel, unfolding its own travel.
And Randall Shreve.
This will be the land. Tear and draw.
For music that keeps us lurking on.
There's a time to cry, now it's time to storm.
Generous support for this program was provided by the Arkansas Humanities Council and the National Endowment for the Humanities. Thank you to writer Mark Spitzer for helping us to better understand this mystery ichthyoid making its way through eons of amphibious evolution dating back to the Jurassic. For Arts and Letters, I'm J. Bradley Minnick. Let's heed the opening lines of a poem, An Apology for the Bottle Volcanic, written by Vackel Lindsay.
Sometimes I dip my pen and find the bottle full of fire. The salamanders flying forth, I cannot but admire.